This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
And it's not like,
when you wish upon a star.
He actually sings it.
And Chad Peace.
But Leeds Duchess says, but we got our money back.
Class is in.
This is Rock School, and my name is Joe Burns, a professor in the Communication Department, Southeastern Louisiana University. Sitting to my immediate left in our brand new, stunningly new painted, new carpet studio. What's your name, young man?
Chad P.
Now, made a lot of bad decisions in your life, Chad?
Yeah.
Yeah,
like
so have
this
I.
Show?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just playing.
There's a lot of good decisions in rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Signing Led Zeppelin, signing Warner Brothers and Van Halen together. Lots and lots of good decisions. But what really is interesting is when a bad decision is made.
Well, it wouldn't be interesting radio or rock and roll if we didn't have bad decisions.
Right. I have here a series of very bad management decisions.
Uh-huh.
And these are decisions you may not have heard of, but are interesting, funny, and entertaining nonetheless.
Sounds like a show.
So for an hour today on Rock School, I figured we would talk about bad management decisions.
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Stax Records. STAX Records.
Uh-huh.
You might know them for Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Booker T and the MGs,
yep.
That Stax sound they
yeah.
gave over to Dusty Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Stax had a same problem that, say, Sun Records had, little independent records have. They could record the music, mm-hmm. they could find the artists, but they couldn't distribute it.
Okay.
They needed a massive label to distribute it.
All right.
Okay. So what Stax did in 1960 was sign a partnership with Jerry Wexler from Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they paid an X amount of dollars for every one of these Stax releases that would be distributed.
Okay.
Okay. So no concerns. The music is being released and massive hits go all over the country from Stax Records, and Stax Records become this massive label and people are like, this is fantastic.
Sounds like a good decision
right.
so far.
Great decision so far. Otis Redding dies.
All right.
And all of a sudden, Atlantic starts releasing Otis Redding stuff.
Uh-oh,
Wait a minute. Wait, what's wrong? What's happening here?
No, Otis Redding was exclusive to Stax, right?
All of a sudden, Stax begins to get lawyers to look at the deal they signed with Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
In the fine print
Uh-oh.
Of the contract,
Uh-oh.
Atlantic put a line contracting contrary mm-hmm. to industry practice. Atlantic became the owner of every Stax song it handled.
Get out of here.
Without realizing it, Stax had signed away its entire catalog, every song that Atlantic handled.
So wait a minute. You're telling me that when Stax recorded a song
yes.
and handed it over to Atlantic to distribute.
That's it. Just send it out.
In Atlantic's eyes,
yes.
not only were you handing it to me to distribute, but you're also handing it to me because now it's mine.
Lock, stock, and barrel and copyright.
Wow.
Rufus Thomas had one that sent
over.
I told
you not to throw away page 12.
We're going to walk the dog from Stax and now Atlantic. Rock School.
Maybe back. Dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. High low, tipsy toe. She broke a needle and she can't sew.
ask you a quick question here regarding that incident.
Shoot.
Who do you blame in that incident, in that sense? Do you blame Stax for not reading the contract?
Or yes.
Do you blame Atlantic for just being... No, that just doesn't seem right to me.
No,
Atlantic would do that. Is that the way it works?
In terms of negotiation, both sides always try to do the best for themselves. And you bring lawyers, you lawyer up, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
You bring lawyers, and the lawyers look at each side of the contract. I think they went in with a handshake and trust and said, oh, Atlantic's a bunch of good guys. And they got nailed. No, you blame Stax.
Oh, man. Because Atlantic seemed like they had a good deal going. They were making money. Why did they go for Stax's jugular vein?
Because they could.
That's just not right, man.
It seems that way, but not. Want another bad decision?
Sure.
MCA Records decided they were not going to get into this whole Sunset Strip, teased up hair, heavy metal, pretty boy stuff. They were not going to get into it.
You're lost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Until they thought, oh, this is really starting to take off.
Uh-huh.
Really starting to go. So in 1989, they decided, just as hair metal was reaching its pinnacle, its peak, they decided to get into it. So they tossed $1 million+ at an L.A. band called Pretty Boy Floyd. Ever heard of them?
Yeah, I have.
Have you really?
I've heard the name.
They had 4 albums. The big one, the debut, was Leather Boys with Electric Toys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it peaked out at 130 on the Billboard charts. And over the next few years, they threw another million at them. Nothing. What? And they threw another million at them. Nothing.
This is going into the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah. And then finally, when the whole thing collapsed, this is called getting in too late.
Yeah.
The whole thing collapsed. They finally said to Pretty Boy Floyd, nah, you're done. And they decided to take a chance around 1991 on this fledgling Seattle band called Nirvana.
Ha!
So it took them $4 million with Pretty Boy Floyd to figure out it was over and grunge had started.
Rock and roll mistake number 4, Pretty Boy Floyd.
Rock and roll is going to set the night on fire. From the debut album, here's Pretty Boy Floyd, Rock School.
You say you won't set the night on fire. Well, it's just one thing that you need to take you higher. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, hair metal died. MCA took them $4 million to realize hair metal had died.
That's a bad decision on your part.
That's a bad song.
I thought you were going to right the wrong and play Nirvana.
No,
you played Pretty Boy Floyd.
Well, you had to hear them. You had to hear how bad they actually were. Okay, this one's a little more difficult to understand. Stay with me.
Okay.
You like Wilco?
I do.
Okay, Wilco has a great album called Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Okay. Wilco was in contract with Reprise in June of 2001.
All right.
Okay. Reprise Records, some people call it Reprise Records, was owned by AOL Time Warner.
Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah.
Okay. When Wilco came and handed over the album Yankee Hotel Foxtrot to Reprise in June of 2001, the guy who owned it, the guy who owned or was in charge of the label, his name was David Kahn, said, no, this stinks.
Okay.
We are not going to release this. You got to go make changes.
Okay.
Wilco said, go pound sand. We're not making any changes. Kahn said, here, take this album, take your walking papers, and get lost.
Okay.
We are not putting this out. It's trash. Fine.
So basically, he relieved them of their contractual obligations.
Right. Take your album and hit the pavement.
Okay, no problem. So Wilco's a free agent at this point.
Right.
Okay.
Wilco begins to shop the album around, and it gets picked up by another company called Nonesuch.
Nonesuch.
Right. Nonesuch roughs out about $300,000 to make the album.
Okay.
The album gets released, and it becomes Wilco's bestseller to date.
Right.
Okay, fine. Here's the thing.
What?
Nonesuch is also
owned by AOL Time Warner.
Right. So AOL Time Warner had the album, let it go, and then paid for it
again.
Twice. Ta-da! From the album Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, here's War on War, Wilco, Rock School.
This is
is Rock School as we talk about bad management decisions.
That's awesome. How long do you think it took them to figure out what they did?
What, pay twice for Wilco?
Right.
Oh, you know,
I really like this new Wilco. Wait a minute.
Well, you know, it was figured out by some poor schmo in the
mail room.
You know, who likes Wilco.
Exactly.
None of the suits up top knew who Wilco was.
So. That's awesome.
Let's talk about David Geffen,
Geffen Records. Uh-huh.
He's going to show up a couple times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, made great decisions.
Yeah.
Here's one of his bad ones.
Okay.
Guns N' Roses had gone platinum like 30 times.
Oh, yeah. Just everything they touched.
So you can't exactly put the guy down for thinking that Axl Rose's decision to make an album called Chinese Democracy is going to succeed, right?
I would have done it.
I probably would have done it, too. He gave him $1 million. Great. Go make the album.
All right.
He immediately started firing members of Guns N' Roses.
That's true. Oh, that album took forever.
It certainly did. Over a decade. Threw another $1 million at him. Set him up on a contract for $244,000 per month of expenses.
Expenses?
Well, you know, cornrows, they cost a lot of money. You know, you can't just buy the wig and all that kind of stuff. That you get that hair going. And it looks like he had Botox or something like that.
Wait, the whole time that we were all waiting for that album to come out, Axl was clearing 200-something thousand a month in contract expenses?
Well, if you're David Geffen, you have to think once this thing drops, it's going to go kablooey.
And I'll get all my money back.
Right, right. $13 million in the red. Later, the thing drops. It does go platinum, but that doesn't get back $13 million.
No,
not at all.
Oh, wow.
You know, every time we play a song on this radio show, there's a little bit of, you know, royalty money. Let's see if we can help
Dave. We're going to help Dave out.
That's right. Here's Chinese Democracy. Rock School.
It don't really matter. Go find out for yourself. No, it don't really matter. Go leave this thing to somebody else.
This is Rock School, and that was Chinese Democracy.
You gave me a copy of that, dude, and I'm sorry. I just don't like it.
Eh.
Because I'm programmed for the GNR that I grew up with.
I bought it immediately because Buckethead and Bumblefoot were the two guitarists.
Well, I'm all about Buckethead. I watched them perform live on MTV with Buckethead playing the opening chords to Welcome to the Jungle.
He's very good.
And I'm marked out like crazy. But when the album, when you gave it to me, I listened to it, and I went, eh. I'm not saying it's bad.
It's not bad.
But I just...
It's not what you expected.
No.
It sounds a lot... It sounds too much... The best way I could put it, it sounds too much European techno rock.
There you go.
It sounds like Kraftwerk should have put it together rather than Guns N' Roses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a break here. We'll be back with more great, great, terrible management decisions. Hello, KLSU out there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thanks for running the radio show.
Hello, WBSD in Burlington, Wisconsin. Thank you so very, very much for being part of the Rock School Radio Network.
You know, we've got a couple more emails from the iTunes that we've been sending out, and I have yet because yesterday, we're recording this early, because yesterday was Martin Luther King's Day, I didn't respond to them, so I got to get up to the computer and do that.
Yeah.
But keep sending us emails off of iTunes. Back in a minute. Rock School. Okay, we're talking about bad management deals. Now, this one also is a little rough to follow.
That's
so
okay.
Here we go.
Go ahead.
Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan in the 1960s was signed to a publisher called Leeds Duchess.
Okay.
They were not really into his kind of music.
Why'd they sign him then?
Well, because they were trying to find the newest thing. Everybody is.
Okay.
And they weren't really doing much with him.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was his manager at the time, Albert Grossman, tried to get him out of the deal and tried to get him with another publisher called Whitmark and Sons.
All right.
Okay. Now, at this time, this Leeds Duchess had 237 songs by Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They weren't doing much with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are Bob Dylan songs.
Right.
Early Bob Dylan songs.
Worth a lot.
Yeah, let your brain go crazy. So, Albert Grossman goes to Leeds Duchess and says, all right, how do I get him out of there?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, we'd like to recoup our money. He said, well, what kind of money are we talking about? Well, we gave him $1,000 advance. Grossman says, "You mean if I give you back the $1,000 advance, I can have him?" Yes, fine. That
Wait
will
a
make
minute.
A zero balance
Wait,
for us.
I'd like to get into this investment deal.
Grossman,
I can scrounge up $1,000 and get Bob Dylan. Are you insane?
Grossman gave them $1,000.
Yeah, he probably had it on his person.
The story goes that he paid it out of his own pocket.
Well, of course.
Yeah, out of his own checking account. Yeah, and 237 songs went over to Whitmark and Son. In case you're wondering, it's stated that the songs are now worth over $30 million. Mm-hmm. Take that. Yeah. How's that for a response?
But Leeds Duchess says, but we got our money back.
Yeah, we're back at zero balance. It's positively 4th Street, Rock School.
You got a lot I knew. I say you are my friend.
Okay, we're running close to the bottom of the hour. I love you. You can't see him because it's radio, but he's shaking his head.
I just can't believe that.
You know, this one's just as good.
Oh.
Beatles. Okay. Decca Records.
Uh-huh.
Decca Records. A&R.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The guys who go out and they find new people. Dick Rowe. Dick Rowe is this guy's name. Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles,
yes.
says to this guy, look, you got to come see the Beatles. You got to come see the Beatles. Now, most people know this little story. They know that Dick Rowe said, they probably didn't know it was Dick Rowe, but they know the story, that he said, nah, guitar bands are on their way out. You've heard that probably.
I think so. I think you mentioned it one or two
times. Yeah, guitar bands are on their way out. That's not going to happen.
All right.
What a lot of people don't know is the follow-up story to it.
Mm-hmm.
Epstein, like, begged him. Into his office, one knee, come on, come see them, at least come see them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Basically, Rose said, oh, look, if it'll get you the heck out of my office, I'll come see them. Great. So what he did was come to see the Beatles in Liverpool at the Cavern Club.
Mm-hmm.
When he got there, there was a complete mob of kids screaming, yelling, kicking to get into the Cavern Club. Now, what would that tell you?
I got to sign these guys.
This is the biggest band around, right?
Yeah.
Not Rowe.
What?
Rowe was upset that there wasn't anybody to let him in. There wasn't any way for him to get in. It was raining. So he was annoyed. He smoked a cigarette. He went home and signed the great band Brian Poole and the Tremolos.
Oh, yeah. I have every one of their albums.
Right. And someone else picked up the Beatles. I wonder if this guy got himself a job like as a waiter somewhere.
Yeah.
Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Rock School.
Oh, yeah. I tell you something. I think you'll understand. Say that something. I wanna hold your hand. I wanna hold your hand.
Man, just unbelievable that, you know, he missed out on that huge deal because the valet parking guys decided to take a cigarette break.
And the kids were screaming.
Right.
All they had to do was turn to the kids and say, who are you here to see?
Yeah.
You know, why are you losing your mind? What's mm-hmm. the problem? We're here to see the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Well, that would have just made me go, I got to hang around and see these guys.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like they were like, well, we're here to see the Beatles. They were losing their minds over them. So, hey, welcome to the bottom of the hour, plus 3 minutes. We are late. My name is Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
Time for 7 days and 70 seconds. Monday, January 18th through Sunday, January 24th. Chad has Monday. Goo.
Monday, January 18th. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And 15 years ago in 1995, the Grateful Dead's Jerry Garcia smashed his rental car into a guardrail and walked away without a scratch.
How about that? He was saved by the beard.
Well, thankfully, he had the insurance also.
Yeah. 30 years ago, Michael Jackson's Off the Wall album is certified gold in the U.S. on Tuesday, January 19th.
Wednesday, January 20th. That's a Wednesday this year. But 45 years ago, in 1965, Alan Freed, you know, the famed DJ who's credited with creating the phrase rock and roll, he died at age 43 in Palm Springs, California, and it was from medical conditions associated with alcoholism.
Yeah, died penniless. On the 21st of January, 20 years ago in 1990, Squeeze launched the heralded show Unplugged on MTV.
January 22nd, back in 1990, here's the Guns N' Roses that I like. Yeah. Viewers swamped the ABC TV switchboard with irate calls after Slash, the guitarist from Guns N' Roses, swore numerous times on live television while accepting an American Music Award. I remember that.
Yeah, he kept putting his hand up to his mouth going, oops. Oops. January 23rd. It's a Saturday this year, but back 15 years ago, Courtney Love is in an Australian court to face charges of disorderly conduct on an airplane. No kidding. And then January 24th, to wrap it up, 40 years ago, John Lennon and Yoko Ono shaved their heads to commemorate the start of One Year for Peace. Now, back to bad management decisions. In 1988, Berry Gordy Jr. sells Motown for $60
million. Yes, he did. Okay. We did a whole show on Motown.
$60 million. Got to be good, right?
I would think.
Wrong.
No.
He did poorly. Didn't even do very well. How do I know? Jerry Moss sold A&M Records to PolyGram, $500 million. David Geffen got $700 million for Geffen Records. Richard Branson unloaded Virgin Records to EMI for $960 million. And to make it even worse, Motown was resold by the company that bought them. They were known as Boston Ventures. They resold Motown, which they had bought for $60 million, to PolyGram for, you ready for this?
Yeah.
$325 million. A return of over 500%. It just doesn't seem right. Now, Berry Gordy himself is rich, but Motown?
You know what? You could always do that. You could always sit back and say, wow, look at all the money I could have gotten. But here I am. I have a swimming pool full of $100 bills.
That's right.
$60 million, okay?
How do you sleep at night?
Very well.
Made of money.
Yeah.
So here you go. From one from Motown, Stevie Wonder, For Once in My Life. Rock School.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Someone I've needed so long. Once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew. Oh, someone warm like you.
All right, this one is simply funny.
Okay.
Because it has to do with a company attempting to impress, I guess, the record-buying public or other record companies, and I don't really understand what they were attempting to do or why they thought this would help them.
Throw it my way.
Casablanca Records.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of disco stuff. Donna Summer, Giorgio Moroder, but they also had one big rock group, Kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Kiss was their big rock group. Casablanca decided to impress, I guess through PR and advertising, by stating that they were shipping all of their albums platinum. We ship platinum.
Oh.
Meaning the albums went out selling a million copies apiece.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Here's the problem.
What's the problem?
There weren't millions of orders. They simply shipped them platinum. I don't know if you remember this or not, but Kiss, at one point in time, put out four solo albums at the same time.
All right.
There was a Paul Stanley, a Gene Simmons, an Ace Frehley, and a Peter Criss solo album, all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And the big push in the advertising was, all four are shipping platinum. That's right. They all shipped platinum. Almost three quarters of every album shipped came back. Because nobody sold them. Basically, Casablanca Records shipped themselves into bankruptcy.
Wow.
Thinking if they created the albums, if they printed the millions, people would buy the millions.
Hmm.
And people didn't buy the millions. I hate to admit this, I own the Gene Simmons solo album. Here is Living in Sin. Rock School.
You found the hotel where I'm staying, and you build up the nerve, and then you call.
Well, I'm at least happy to hear that you did your part.
Why?
You said you got the Gene Simmons solo album?
For Casablanca.
Yeah, you threw him a couple of bucks. Glad to hear you're helping out.
Thank you. It was one of those things where I was young. If I had had the money, I'd have bought all four, because even at that time, I kind of knew they were going to become collector's albums.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who had it, who had the Gene Simmons album, you're going to think I'm lying, but the last song on the album, Gene Simmons sings the Disney When You Wish Upon a Star.
What?
And it's not like,
when you wish upon a star.
He actually sings it, you know, when you wish
gracefully
upon a star. Right. Yeah.
Why?
You got me. He just sings
it. He picked out what he sang, right?
I would assume.
So Gene Simmons is sitting at his desk. What shall I sing? What'll I end the album with?
When You Wish Upon a Star.
And his son is over there in the corner watching Pinocchio.
And he sings it.
And he goes, aha!
What do I know?
Wow.
Hello, KSCL. Lick, thank you for listening up there in Shreveport. And hurry up, go find it. I'm sure it's on downloads, When You Wish Upon a Star. So go
Hello,
ahead.
Radio Universidad in Salamanca, Spain. Thank you for being part of the Rock School Radio Network.
When we get back, the industry kills the single. Dumb move. Rock School. Talking about bad music decisions, basically by management, here today on Rock School. Do you remember, were you old enough to remember when vinyl was basically phased out and the CD was brought in?
I remember having some vinyl records when I was young.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I got these little cool things called cassette tapes.
Oh, well, they were out, see, at the same time.
Yeah.
But I remember distinctly, especially because I was working radio, that vinyl just went away.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of CDs were coming in, just as CDs are kind of being overtaken now by download.
Yeah.
At that same time, the world of music, kind of the RIAA, if you will, not just one record label, but the whole thing, decided to phase out the vinyl single as well. And it used to be the way that people would sort of be introduced to new music. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to buy the whole album. And I think what happened was, and this is as much my opinion as anything else, I think what happened was people in the music industry attempted, well, we're moving away from vinyl. Let's see if we can't force people to buy the entire album. They tried to do singles, mm-hmm. which were cassette singles, mm-hmm. and they tried to do CD singles for a while, mm-hmm. but see, they priced them badly. Mm. It used to be when you would do vinyl, the record was $9 or $10,
yeah.
but the record 45 was 99 cents.
Okay,
I can remember specifically, you could go into a Woolworth's or a Ben Franklin, those were two rather old, you know, little five and dime stores, and there were just walls of 45s.
Mm-hmm.
And for 99 cents a piece, you could bang out four or five songs, and it's how you got introduced to new music.
Yeah.
But when CD singles came out, they were $5 a pop.
Yeah, yeah.
Cassette singles were $5 a pop.
Because the albums were $15.
Right, and what they were doing is kind of forcing you, look, you can spend a third of the price of the album, or you can go buy the album.
Right.
And what it did was basically say to the consumer, just buy the album.
Mm-hmm.
Look, just buy the album. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of the worst decisions that the music industry could have made, because the CD is not any more expensive. It's just they were using it to force you to buy the album. And I think it's one of the things that actually brought downloading so much to the future.
Probably so, because a lot of those albums that came out had the one or two hits.
Right.
And you only bought them for the hits.
Exactly. Whereas if that happened when vinyl was out, that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You bought two 45s. The band had their hit with a 45.
Yeah.
They still made money and they got to put out their next album.
Right, right.
So there. By the way, the first CD single was Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms, but it was also put out on vinyl. The first CD single, period, was Pink Floyd, Learning to Fly.
Oh.
And it sounds like this. Rock School.
Into the distance, ribbon of black.
Talking about bad management deals here. REM is signed to Warner Brothers in 1996 for a five-album deal, $80 million.
Nice.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
To recoup that, every single album, each one of the five albums, has to sell 3 million.
Okay.
Each, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Didn't do it.
It didn't?
Didn't do it. Each album sold less than a fifth of that. They go further into the hole by letting REM, Warner Brothers does, by letting REM keep all of their master tapes.
Oh, wow.
Right. The problem was, although that was really nice for REM, all of these following indie bands who wanted to keep their integrity were all told by further record companies, we want to keep our integrity. No, no. Not after what happened with R.E.M.
I gotcha.
So they may have started the indie movement.
But they sure did finish it, too.
They may have also closed it.
Wow.
Here's from the album Up, Day Sleeper. Rock School.
Receiving department, 3 a.m. Staff cuts have socked up the overage. Directives are posted, no callbacks, complaints.
I would have at least thought that they would have sold to 3 million because I have quite a few of the R.E.M. albums. I'm a big R.E.M. fan.
Oh, the early ones? The
right.
Sidewinder?
Automatic
and
for
all
the
of
People
that?
And stuff
oh, sure.
like that.
But once they hit that later on, didn't happen.
Wow.
Didn't happen, and they pretty much closed the door. We're going to finish with this one. Now, I don't know whether this is the best idea or the best management decision or the worst management decision. Well, Sam Phillips sells Elvis to RCA for $30,000. Some people say, no, you gave up Elvis Presley. How could you have done that? The problem was, remember Stax Records?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way Sun could have distributed millions upon millions upon billions of albums.
He was in over his head from the get-go.
Way over.
Right.
So $30,000 at the time.
What the
might
time?
Might as well have been $1 million. Late 50s.
Okay.
Might as well have been $1 million today. So up to you. Best management decision? Worst. You could argue it either way.
Well, I mean, he had to do what he had to do.
Yeah.
He had this crown jewel, but he couldn't do anything with it.
That's right.
I call it a good decision.
I think it is, too. So we're going to end with a good one.
All right.
Blue Suede Shoes. I'm Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
Glasses dismissed.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now, go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do it.